What's up, everyone? It's Tweak or Gavin.
Ooh, Mix. What's good, everyone? I almost said Parkus or Mink. I don't even know what I'm doing. It's Marcus or Pink. What's up?
What up, what up? It's Charles or Chuck. And unfortunately, Haz was feeling a little under the weather today. So we all hope that Haz gets well soon. And today, obviously, we have some pretty crazy topics. I mean, we had the tweet from Nintendo talking about the successor to the Switch. The director is slated to come out in June, if I'm not mistaken, right? So that's going to be really sick. I remember right before I went to bed last night, I saw that tweet. I was like, whoa, that is insane. And I can't believe, time flies. The Switch has been out for 9 years now, about. Yeah, that's what they said in the tweet. So that's pretty crazy. I mean, really crazy. We've been waiting for this for so, so long, right? And then obviously Kagaribi happened. I think Kagaribi will be the most stacked tournament this year. I'd be very surprised if any other tournament was becomes more stacked than that. I'm personally bummed that Sonic didn't go. I really wanted to see how well Sonic's could have done in Japan. But obviously it is a very expensive trip out there to Japan. And then Japan, just the way their tournaments work, is they don't really have prize money. So it's hard to justify going out there and not being able to attempt to get into the money and break even or go like not as so negative. Because I know Jude made a tweet today too, which was talking about how like players' motivation to get out to tournaments and stuff, and just going over how expensive it is, right? And then even going over that Zombo won Genesis and still can't get a sponsor. So you know, very good point coming out from Jackal/Jude. And if you guys do enjoy the content, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Of course, let us know how you felt about Kagaribi, the results, the NA slaughter. It was rough. Let us know in the comments. And of course, if you guys want to support us even more, the best way to support us is directly through our Patreon, where we give out bonus content weekly. Today, we're going to be recording the bonus topic, and that is going to be discussing the top ranked players. So, I mean, like me and Pink were talking about it before the show, and we don't really think there's a race to number one, but you know, the top three or four rankings, I think, is very different from last year. So it'll be really interesting to talk about that topic. But Gavin, how you been doing, man?
Good. That Nintendo tweet, I think, put new life into all of us, probably. I have a lot of thoughts. I've been ready for this for a long time. I'm very excited for all of my predictions to be correct. And I watched a bit of Delta and Kagaribi as well. So what about you, Marcus?
Bro, I don't play games. Like, I don't play Nintendo games. Like, I don't play console games, really. So, I mean, it's cool.
You're not going to play Smash Ultimate Deluxe?
Hey, I mean, I might tap in because I won't have to learn an entire new system. Like, sure. Like, I may tap
that's
in.
That's what we're excited about.
What I'm really excited about is if the Switch 2 online is good, I'll lock in on some Smash Brothers for my house. Let's go. Let's go. We were just talking about travel costs. Let's Smash Bros at home.
Let's see you in coin box.
Sure. I'm saying, do you understand how big those events will be if they're sustainable? And oh man, it's just there's a lot of potential there. But I'm good. I watched all of Kagaribi. I did not watch all of Delta. I watched most of Delta, but once it got to the Faded Grands, I kind of just, which actually I went back and watched Delta Grands, and it was actually two very good sets. So that was, I was like kind of sad I missed it live, and that's kind of what made me stay up for Kagaribi, because I was like, well, I mean, it still might be another good set, even though it's 5:30 and I'm watching Hurt vs. Arcola for the second time today. Like, it's cool. Like, it's all good. Anyway, how's it going, Chuck?
It's going good. It's going good. A lot of exciting Smash, a lot of exciting news coming through. And yeah, everything's been going great at home. So definitely can't complain. But I know Gavin wants the first topic to be the announcement for Nintendo. So Gavin, do your thing, man.
Okay. So,
all right, let's do this.
So there's a direct slated for June. Nintendo has not done a direct, like a traditional direct for 2024 at all, which is interesting because they usually do one pretty consistently in February. So we already knew something was up. But the interesting thing about this Direct is it won't have anything Switch 2 related, they said, which is interesting. So that's why they had to make the post, I guess, that's saying like it will happen, but it's not happening in the Direct. And we don't know, and it's for the latter half of 2024, which is interesting. It's a pretty small window. We only know one 2025 game for Nintendo, and it's for the Switch, and it's the new Pokemon Legends game, which had no gameplay or anything. Pretty clearly a Switch 2 game. It's probably going to be both the Switch and the Switch 2 or something. So my question to the universe is, in order for this to be like a crazy exciting Direct, it would have to be one of those things where they're revealing games that will be on Switch 2, but they're just not saying they are. Like Breath of the Wild was revealed, but the Switch wasn't yet. Like that kind of thing. So that's possible. But yeah, I don't know. And the fact that it's a Switch successor is all we needed to know as well. It's not some revolution like foreign idea. It's going to be something we're familiar with. It's going to be recognizable. It's going to be part of like the Switch family of systems. Like they like to use that terminology a lot, which is important because Nintendo, like we've talked about on the show before, likes to do things in pairs before they go crazy with a new idea. Think of like Wii and Wii U, and then think of Wii U to Switch. Definitely not comparable anymore. You know what I mean? It's a completely separate idea. So the Switch and the successor to the Switch will be a pair. And if you think of something like the Switch OLED, it was rumored that the OLED was supposed to be something a bit more than what it is, but things happened, things went wrong, like graphic card shortages and all that or whatever, something like that. So it's probably just going to be a beefy Switch, maybe a couple gimmicks, maybe something better with like Joy-Con technology. Overall, a better Switch equals everyone is happy, in my opinion. So I'm very excited. This has a lot of potential, not just for people who are fans of Nintendo, but also Smash and competitive Smash players, all that stuff. There's a lot to be excited about. But at the same time, now that it's confirmed, I feel like I'm more impatient than ever. But yes, there is a lot to be excited about. And it's really important to consider Nintendo's timeline on their current big hitter games. So we shouldn't be expecting a huge Zelda game with this new console immediately because they just did Tears of the Kingdom. You should be expecting a 3D Mario game because Odyssey is like at least 7 years old, at least, right?
Yes, it's very old.
Yeah, exactly. So Metroid Prime 4 might finally return from the dead because it would be a nice way to show off the new system. Don't expect that to be a launch title. That would be very naive to think a Metroid game would be a launch title. It will not. Expect Mario Kart, actually. Expect Mario Kart relatively soon into the Switch successors, like the first year or so. Expect Animal Crossing, in my opinion. And to be honest, expect Smash. I'll just say it. I'd say within the year and a half into the new console's life, at the latest, expect Smash, in my opinion. Especially if it's a successor to Smash Ultimate, which it will be, but I'm not here to argue with all of y'all that think there's going to be a Smash reboot. I'm very passionately angry about people who think that.
The reboot argument.
I hate it. Yeah, Nintendo's going to be like, here, guys, this has less characters. Please buy this more than you bought Smash Ultimate. Like, what? How do they market that?
That's
this game has less. No. Nintendo's not stupid. They have all these licenses for longer than you guys think. All the characters will be in the new game. And it will be Smash Ultimate Deluxe. It's not going to be a reboot with like 20 characters. No one's going to want that. How are they going to make a game with 20 characters and then have DLC that's like Master Chief? Like, it'll be the weirdest game ever, and it will not do as well as Smash Ultimate. Even if they put a focus on single player, like, no.
In a casual perspective, it's like, I don't see any casual players of Smash just being like, oh, wait, there's how many characters? Like, I think that's one of the first questions, actually, when people think about, oh, a new Smash game is, well, how many characters and stuff like that. I think that's a huge selling point for the casual audience.
Like, imagine they, like, did all that with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and the next Mario Kart has, like, a handful of characters, less tracks. It's like, that's not how this works.
A new Mario Kart sounds so hype, because I think they knocked it out of the park with Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, Mario Kart 8 is 10 years old. Expect Mario Kart 8 pretty soon, or expect a new Mario Kart pretty soon into the Switch successor. Splatoon is always a big one, but I don't know how, like, when... I'm not as invested in that. I don't know when people should expect Splatoon, but yeah, it's very interesting. And honestly, I'm expecting Donkey Kong relatively soon into the new.
You're hopeful.
It's been 10 years since Tropical Freeze released, so
they surely didn't abandon that IP, right?
I guess they could get away with it if they wanted to at this point.
They could, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
True. They were in the Mario movie.
Mario movie sequel. There's gonna be a Zelda movie, like
the Smash universe. I'm telling you, the MCU. I'm telling you,
they're building up for it for sure.
That'd be so. Yeah. Hype.
I guess we could talk about
Master Anis Thanos.
Put Paper Mario in Smash. Put Geno in Smash. Put Waluigi in Smash. Let's see here.
Do those characters really deserve it?
Put Dante in Smash.
What about like the ninth or tenth Fire Emblem character that deserves it?
There you go.
Sure, as long as my characters get in, bro. Go ahead. Another sword character for Diddy to beat or something.
Just add them on there. Throw them on there.
That lineup would be Diddy, Paper Mario.
Lit. What? And Geno. And Dante from Devil May Cry.
Dante would be raw in Smash.
Do you think any of them will beat Steve if Steve is untouched?
Nah.
Ain't no way. Nah. Dude, Paper Mario's going to be able to like phase through the blocks or something with invincibility. Let's lock in.
Yo. He still gets zero to death once he gets past that block. True.
Paper Mario does some Z-axis shit and he just like goes through the block.
As soon as Paper Mario gets close to Steve, bro.
Steve's going to start flailing.
Your shield's gonna get poked, bro.
You don't think is gonna beat Steve in Minecraft?
You said unchanged.
You said unchanged. Yeah, man. The future of Steve is upon us.
If a character comes out that beats Steve unchanged,
well,
I think we have a bigger issue on our hands about the development of Smash Bros. True. Not, you know what I mean? Like,
true.
Yeah, because what are all the other characters that aren't Steve going to do?
Yeah, it's like, holy shit. If there's a character that beats Steve unchanged, then like, how broken is that new character? Like, what?
I can't even think of a character. Like, just thinking about a character that could do that, they would have to just like look at the blocks and they just get... You just... And they have auto turnaround. So auto turnaround.
Like Pokemon mean look just
evaporates all blocks on eye contact.
Oh, I expect a Splatoon character that's like kind of Villager Isabelle, kind of like where it's an Echo, but like not actually an Echo.
A couple moves are different. Yeah. Actually, no, Isabelle's. Has a fairly different moveset. There's a couple moves that are the same, I guess.
I expect like an Inkling Octoling kind of thing. I genuinely think Paper Mario has an amazing shot. And Geno. That's why I want this game out sooner rather than later, because the timeline is really adding up for characters I would like to see.
Yeah, also, I really hope.
If a new DK game comes out, we're getting Dixie Kong, bro.
Oh, true. If we get another DK game, then
like in the right character. Time frame.
Yeah, yeah. Because I would like to see. I mean, Nintendo has already done the whole like marketing thing with Ultimate, right? With Byleth. And I mean, yeah. I think mainly we've seen it with Fire Emblem characters, but I would like to see them go more into that. And even if Nintendo doesn't want to quote unquote sell out and sell skins, it would be really cool if they use skins as a marketing thing where it's like, oh, if you have Ultimate and you know, buy this game, or like say the Zelda movie comes out and there's something on your movie ticket, or you can scan some kind of code or whatever that is proof that you watched the movie or whatever. And then you get some kind of skin, like Zelda skin or Link skin or something like that. That would be super dope. I think using it at least for marketing would be sick, but I mean, obviously they could just get a lot of money for it too, but I think they obviously know that. So there's a reason why they don't do it. Right. But it would really be, cool to see at least that like them use it for marketing.
What characters y'all want to see in Deluxe?
Conker. Let's lock in.
Conker?
It's never happening.
Good luck. I would love to see it. I would love to see it too. Hell no.
It's never happening.
Never happening.
No reason.
Dante or Chief would be cool.
It's not even on NSO. Bad for a day.
I would be shocked if it were on NSO. Yeah.
It's never coming to NSO, bro.
They should delete that game from existence.
Yeah. But like, what? Like, who else do I even want? I don't even think I want another character at this point. I feel like I've received all the characters that I've ever wanted for Super Smash Brothers.
More is better. More.
Yeah, Gavin is not thought satisfied. That.
And then I played Ultimate, and more is not better. Nope.
More
is
oh,
better.
Yeah, we messed up.
Something will slip through the cracks. Nope.
It's okay. Nope. It's okay that Steve is in the game, because Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII is playable.
Playable? Well, that's playable. A good word. Yeah.
Very playable. Extremely playable.
Well, not playable, selectable.
Selectable, there we go.
You can click on him, and the announcer says Sephiroth.
He's playable. He's not barely playable, but he's like playable.
My dream pick that I know would never come into the game is Lanky Kong. But if Lanky Kong did get into the game, he would play Lanky is based, but he's never getting into Smash. Bro barely got into one Donkey Kong game.
Yeah.
Like,
and the funniest thing about Lanky Kong's lore is he's like from another island and just decide to hang out with them. Like, he's not even like, a lot of the time they're actually like related in some way, like a family. Lanky Kong is just
Some dude.
Just some guy. Yeah, this is what people watch this podcast for, to learn these fun facts.
Hey, it is.
Like, I think Lanky Kong is connected to like a, like he's the same species as like some sort of enemy in the country games, like the orangutans. Oh. And he's just from that area, and he got bored being with those people, so he just went to Donkey Kong's area.
I'm gonna go hang out with Donkey Kong.
Something stupid, yeah.
Gavin, you know what's really funny? I was on your stream the other day, and someone made this like long post, and you read it, and it was talking about how you should play Donkey Kong instead of Diddy Kong. And then he said you should play Diddy Kong's brother, Donkey Kong, right? And then your response was hilarious. You're just like, I only have one problem with this statement. They're not brothers.
It was just a bunch of like clearly incorrect things,
right,
that I could have been mad at, but I'm only mad at the no misinformation about the lore in here, bro. Not my stream. They're not brothers.
No, they're not.
There's a lot of official lingo. Little buddy is very, very common one that they use for DK and Diddy. Diddy is DK's little buddy.
Damn, we'll never get a DK movie, bro. I guess we were lucky enough that they threw Donkey Kong into the
movie. He had a huge role. He actually had a huge role.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess can't complain.
I mean, I don't necessarily want a movie. I was satisfied with what I got.
A game is more important.
Yes. Which, I have faith. But, I guess, back to like Delta / Kagurebi, probably mostly Kagurebi, but I will say this. One of the things I was most interested in, and I still keep thinking about it, Japan seems to have a pretty hard time with like Tamapi and his Bayo.
I thought that was a really good point. Both of this, because you right? just Yes, yeah. I believe so. Mm-hmm. And then a very crazy showing, I believe, fifth, right?
Yeah.
Fifth at Kagaribi. And honestly, should have beaten Mia, in my opinion. Oh, man. There was like this one witch time that Tama P got, and somehow ended up not getting the confirm into the smash attack. I don't know if Tom P just got hit or if something clanked or something weird like that happened, but that was super unfortunate. And there was a couple of dares that Tom P went for that were after witch time on Game Watch Up B. Like Tom P dropped from ledge, witch time, tried to double jump backwards and hit Mia with dare being up a stock. So that whiffed and then went for another dare later on in the set.
After Witch Twist 2, Game 5, yeah.
Yes. So, like, man, it was unfortunate because I felt like Tama P should have won that set. But, you know, it's a couple mistakes here and there. Mia played a lot cleaner and ended up winning it. That could have just changed the entire... We almost had Bayo Snake in winner's finals of that kind of caliber tournament.
Which is difficult insane. For Bayo, I believe.
Yes. From my understanding, but I don't know how that matchup has... evolved in a sense, right? I don't know how Bayo's. I know Bayo, like year one, it was like impossible mode. But Bayo's have gotten better at recovering against grenade at ledge. Obviously, you can't witch twist, so they have to do ABK or directional air dodge to ledge to not detonate the grenade and stuff like that. But yeah, it's crazy to me because Tama P just went to Hawaii and. I would say compared to the Kagaribi and Delta performance, I wouldn't say I had a lackluster performance, but didn't have any crazy wins at KauaiCon. But they get the Hawaii power-up. There's a lot of players that go to Hawaii and they get the Hawaii power-up. So shouts to that.
Yeah.
Tom P just like tearing it up afterwards. But it's crazy because I feel like the best Bayo discussion is so like it changes month to month, man. It's just crazy. I know both like all the Bayos just compete in completely different areas, right? Bloom being in Europe, Lima being NA, and then Tama P being Japan. So we don't really get to see them at the same tournament, but then randomly one of them will do really good in their region. And then another one will do really good in their region. And I guess on paper, you could say Tama P might have the edge now just because Tama P did really good at, you know, the most stacked tournament of the year and probably will be for the rest of the year. But it's just an interesting discussion because maybe Tama P is just more comfortable in Japan and stuff like that. I'm not too sure. It's really hard to say because I feel like before this tournament, most people's opinion would be that Lima was the best. But I mean, this you can't deny this performance, right? I know it's recency bias, but man, this was crazy and should have beaten Mia. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's just the dynamic is so interesting to me because. Me and Akula have to work super hard to beat Tama P. And I just, that's the thing that left the biggest impression on me after the two tournaments collectively. It's just like, it's like a game five last hit, me and Akula win and like super pop off. Like they just like fought for their lives. And it's just so interesting, like how much trouble this character is giving, all the Japanese players specifically. And obviously it's a character that does well in general, but I don't know. That's, like I said, left the biggest impression on me.
I'm going to bring her back.
If I had to say one thing that left the biggest impression on me, it was like that, especially because it was like a noticeable thing at both events in terms of how well Tama P did.
So. Well, and the crazy thing too is like the counterplay is there. It's not like they're just getting blown up randomly from Bayo combos. Like sometimes Tama P will get a solid... you know, maybe 50 to KO or 0 to KO. Tama P had a really good conversion against Zachary with like up air, double jump, up air, fair, which was really crazy to see on the right side. But the Tama P was not getting a lot of up tilt to back airs. Everyone was DIing it in. Everyone was DIing it in and forcing the sour spot of back air, right? So the counterplay is definitely there. It's just Tama P's playing the matchups really, really well, playing super patient. Knowing how to get the KOs. We saw a lot of jab KOs and yeah, I mean, just really creative off the ledge too. It's crazy to see sometimes where Mia will struggle. And I mean, eventually Mia was catching on and catching like some of the stalling off the ledge. Like Tama P would dip really low. Then which twist, and then it's like, okay, what's the mix up from the double jump and things like that. Eventually Mia was catching on to that, but still, I mean, making Mia, so someone who's playing Game Watch and neutral being for their ledge trap, seem like, oh wow, like this character is working really hard to get damage on the ledge. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing I noticed the first time Lima went to Japan last year. I guess two things, but I've just lumped them together as one, is Bayo actually does pretty well at getting out of disadvantage against Game Watch relative to like everyone else in the game, you know. So I just remember like Lima just dive kicking to the other side of me and being like, where do I go? And I was like, oh snap. Like I never really consider that being something that would help Bayonetta win, or like that even being in the realm of possibility. Cause going into the set or at the match when they played, I was like, bro, Lima's about to get cooked. This matchup sounds awful on paper. And then I was watching it play out and I was like, well, you got some witch time, so down air isn't like free. You can up B out of shield on reaction to them up being if they hit your shield. So up B isn't free. You can get out of disadvantage. You don't have to go to the ledge. You can do some witch time shenanigans off ledge. That's bad stuff. I was like, honestly, like, this is probably more playable than not. I don't really know who the best Bayonetta is. I mean, if we go off results, I guess it's Tamaki. It's just interesting because... Wait, Gavin, did you beat Lima the last time y'all played? Have y'all played since that collision?
I don't think we did play, so I think Lima beat me last time we played, yeah.
Yeah, and you played Tamaki and no flame, but that joint looked so easy. Like, it... Which is crazy because Lima like just beat you, like he really had you sweating. So it's kind of, I don't know, sometimes there's just that dynamic, like it could be like difference of play style, it could be comfortability, there's so many things it could be. I think what stood out to me the most this weekend, and I'm glad we started off talking about Tamaki and Mia, is Mia's adaptation is actually ridiculous. It's got to be some of the best in the world. And his composure is also really, really good. He reverse 3-0'd Tamaki. He reverse 3-0'd Hurt and Grants. Like, he's down two games. He doesn't even care. He's like, I'm figuring this out slowly but surely. And the games just start getting worse and worse over time. He lost game one to Goblin. Did he lose game one to Goblin? I don't remember if he lost game one. But I know he played Goblin. And as the set went on, I mean, Mia was doing, like, run up, parry, Goblin's jab, run up, parry, Goblin's down tilt. Like, he just knew, like, every single time, oh, you're gonna swing here at this timing. Like, there's so many different ways to go about that situation, but he's like showing you, like, hey, I got your timings down, your options down, I know everything you're gonna do. And it makes it hard for you to play against a player like that, where you just start second guessing everything you do. And Gavin, I actually wanted to ask you a question, because you've played against him a lot of times. Do you feel as though, like, as the set is going on, it gets harder and harder to play against him? Because you are also really good at adapting and figuring things out. And the way you play is you pay a lot of attention to your opponent. So I was just curious how you felt, like, when you play against him. Because watching it this weekend was, I don't know, it was incredible.
I think the handful of times I've played Mia, the hardest thing about it is... because he hits you so hard, like, I think most of the time if you get hit, you die. So the hardest thing about it is something that would seem like a casual decision you could make in neutral to, like, try to open your opponent up becomes really scary because he doesn't give you anything for free. So, like, going for a monkey flip or trying to catch a jump with an aerial or a banana or, like, trying to catch his movement with something or, like, doing anything bold. Like, you start to think, like, what can I do just to, like, control space or just to do it? Like, do I even have anything that I can just throw out? And that's scary because something that would be a why not option as Diddy against other players becomes a, hey, if this doesn't work, you might lose your stock for it rather than, like, resetting to neutral. So that's really scary. I think for a character that can be a little clunky and slow and like lacks like some hitboxes in some weird ways. Mia controls the ground really well. He inches forward in neutral really well. He doesn't rely on like lazy strategies like rolling or spot dodging. So yeah, I would say the hardest thing about fighting Mia is you can't do any like why not options. Like it feels like you have no way to put pressure on Mia, because even before he's using his actual moves, like he's putting all the pressure on you. So
that's my. Yeah, so would you say it's like restrictive in a way?
It's restrictive before anything is actually even restricted, which is interesting because Game Watch does restrict you once he hits you, but it feels like that is happening to you before he actually gets the opening. So yeah, it's terrifying because like I said, it's like if Kazuya was like a consistent character or something like that.
That's a weird way to think about it. Oh gosh.
It's like me as a Kazuya or Luigi player, but like has all the well-rounded stuff that's necessary for the character he's playing, which is interesting because usually well-rounded wouldn't be something I would attribute to Game & Watch, but in comparison to other things, I definitely would be okay with it.
Yeah, what impresses me the most about Mia's play at this tournament at Kagaribi was those back airs, super on point, so many like jump. So many stocks were closed out with back air. And I mean, obviously that move is really strong and really good. Just knows when and where to place it. And Mia's parries are so crazy. And I think Gavin talking about not the lazy out in terms of spot dodging or rolling, I think Mia goes for more of the parries. So it kind of makes sense where maybe in the first couple games he's going for parries, but he doesn't really have the right reads on you and stuff like that. And then as the set goes on, the parries become more on point. Now, is Game & Watch probably one of, if not the best character out of parry? Yeah, and then on top of that, you got to think about OSs too, right? In terms of just while you're dropping your shield, you have access to jump and you have access to up B. So if he drops shield and then the parry doesn't go off, but he still can react and see, oh, hey, like you jumped, right? Okay, cool. I'm still lagging, quote unquote, from parry, but I can just up B as Game & Watch. So I think the risk reward for Game & Watch going for parries and the parry OSs that Game & Watch has out, like just out of a drop parry or quote unquote lagging from parry, they're so insane. And yeah, I mean, we, on top of that, Game Watch up B comes out on frame 3. So if you parry something and you're in range of Game Watch up B, it doesn't matter if it's a multi-hit. It doesn't matter how quick the multi-hit is because you get 3 frames of advantage from the parry, right? So no matter what, you can parry up B anything in the game, which is absolutely crazy and insane, right? So the character is really good with parries, but I also think Mia... I think some other Game & Watch players, and this might be an earlier thought of thinking, but it's like, oh, well, my up B out of shield is so good, I don't necessarily have to go for parries. But Mia is a Game & Watch player, the best Game & Watch player, and goes for so much parries, right? Even though Mia has the luxury of, okay, most of the time, like 80 to 90% of the time, you probably don't even have to parry the move to get a punish. You can just up B out of shield. But Mia goes for that parry. So I think that's what elevates him so, so high. And then parry is, you know, the thing in Ultimate where you can get the biggest reward. When Mia gets parries and his punish game is that crazy and he's just doing so much damage to you, then the neutral just gets so scary, in my opinion.
Okay, I have another question for Gavin, because he's the only person that's played Mia, so I can't be like, bro. I'm like, Chuck, have you played Mia in like Fridley's or
something? I don't want to play against Mia.
Okay, never mind. My bad. Okay, so I was observing that... something that I found was a strong strength of Game Watch, I may have asked you this before, I'm not sure if we talked about it, but is that he puts you in repeat situations a lot, like via up air, via nair, and like the ledge trapping situation via just him pressing the B button. Do you feel when you're playing against it that being put in those situations over and over and over again makes it more difficult to make like good or correct decisions? Because it feels like when I'm watching players, at first they're like, I know what to do in this situation, and then like Mia will make an adjustment
after a game or two, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I'm like, can they not readjust to the situation, or is it just he's put them in the situation so many times that he just understands like pretty much every outcome. Do you feel that when you're playing against him?
I think, to be honest, but you're 100% right. I think a lot of people go into fighting a good Game & Watch thinking they have like their really disciplined strategy to deal with ledge trapping and juggling. And then after a stock or two, or maybe a game or two, you're like, oh, I don't have, like, whatever I'm doing is not, like, I'm getting destroyed like the rest of them. So I think my advice for that is, like, realizing that there's a reason why it's working so much, and it's because there's nothing you can do. Like, you're dead. There's nothing you can do. So I guess we got to work on when we're not in that, like when we're in neutral, what can we do? You know what I mean? Like, it's like a Kazuya or Luigi type of thing. It's just really drawn out, which in a way you could argue is even stronger than that. So yeah, I don't know. I think my biggest thing is reframing it in a weird way of thinking it's actually unplayable. And in a way it might help you beat Mia, because you're not stressing yourself out thinking you're doing something wrong when you're getting beat up so much in advanced state, because you're probably not. Like, Game Watch can just kill you. Like, there's not, like, the up airs and the ledge trapping, like, you're just dead. So it just makes you worry about the areas where Game Watch is a lot weaker. But yeah, I could easily see it. Like, it reminds me of like when the kill screen happens, but you survive, you know how stressful people play after that? They're like, oh snap, I'm alive. But then they just play terribly because they almost lost their stock for the final, like for the final stock in like a game 5 set or something. Like, when you're fighting Game Watch, it's really similar. Those hits, even though it's so drawn out, it's the same feeling you get in your gut when Luigi or Kazuya grabs you or something like that, except it's really drawn out, and that initial jump scare is for the whole stock. Like, you're just very desperate, like trying to do something, so it's very difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, Game Watch just commands so much space, and even just being on a platform against Mia was so crazy. Mia has done an incredible, like, Game Watch has so much wild set play, and I think Game Watch has got to be, at least in advantage state, one of, if not the strongest set play character in the game, just because falling up air while you're shielding on the platform, is he going to go falling up air into like a short jump or a full jump there? Is he going to go to falling up air into like another short hop setup into another falling up air? And then if you let the second falling up air happen, right, then all of a sudden the Nair will shield poke you. So there's so many crazy situations, and even Mia's usage of fair as well. There's so many times where if the fair is really close to the ground, it's like, is he going to go fair jab? Is he going to go fair grab? You can essentially force so many different guaranteed RPS situations. So yeah, the set play just gets so wild in advantage state, and Mia is getting better and better at using forward air, which I think is one of the more like not so black and white things about Game Watch. I think forward air is one of the moves that have a little bit more depth rather than just like, oh, let me stand up, roll on bacon, right? Like, that's very black and white in terms of just, okay, after I do X amount of bacons, I can walk forward if they get hit by the last one because their intangibility is running out. I forward tilt, and they're essentially forced to do a ledge option, right? So yeah, I think he's done an amazing job, and I do think when your character has a streamlined advantage state, it's easier to collect information, right? Oh, okay, my character won neutral. It's either up air, falling up air, frame trapping, which my opponent can't beat my up air. It's a literal projectile shooting upwards, and I'm falling down while doing it. So I won't even get hit by the project or anything. And if they neutral air dodge or try to get through it, you know, very simple stuff. And then if they want to avoid the up air frame traps, they're going to have to burn double jump, go to ledge, which gives me time to bacon, right? So these scenarios are the same a lot of the times. So the Game Watch player is put in that position to collect information so much more times than maybe other characters' more unique frame trapping or advantage scenarios, right? So I do think the more simple your advantage state, the better for many different ways and in many different departments. And one of those departments is collecting information.
I actually want to talk about Akola next, but the last thing I want to say about Mia that I haven't really fully thought about before or like said out loud is I think he spaces out his greedy moments really well. Like when he does like a bomb into something greedy rather than just like a true block string, like where he goes for the, where basically his like up smashes, his block strings into like smash attacks or, you know, his ledge trapping where it's not as traditional, like stuff like that. I think he reads people really well, and I think he spaces out his greedy moments really well, depending on like the deficit or the advantage he has and stuff like that. And I think it really makes a lot of sense, like a lot of his down smashes and up smashes where he decides to do them. He's definitely not like a why not up smasher or down smasher. It's very deliberate, and he is usually spacing out some sort of greed really well, where otherwise he would just stick to like block stringing people or like keeping people in disadvantage. So that's the last thing I wanted to say about Mia that I think is interesting. But I wanted to talk about Akola, and I guess I mostly actually wanted to talk about the combination of Akola and Hurt, like their matches. And it I think basically Hurt's gameplay gave him the best chance to actually exploit Akola's habits. Because I think in a lot of situations, Akola's habits can't be dealt with, at least to the point where he like loses stocks or games for it that often. So because of something like that, it makes it hard to like scare your opponent or anything like that if they have things they'll do and you can't really do much about it. But Hurt was definitely doing things about it. Because like Snake's up tilt is what, like frame 6?
Yes.
When you have something like that that kills below triple digits, you can call those habits and make them pay for it. And that's how he won.
Very early.
That's how he won the winner set, where he closes into your space, you have a roll habit, and the game ends because of it. And there's a lot of factors that go into not just like having the up tilt, but there's a lot of factors about what Snake does as a character that lets him have the opportunity to punish something like that. But that was the big one for me, where not only was it like just a very intense, crazy set to watch as a spectator, it's also like, okay, how can other characters do this? You know what I mean? Like, I got to think about it like this, because at first glance, when Steve first came out, you look at the things that you think are clunky if you're trying to beat him, and it's just most things, like his general, like, like you can try to outrange him, and he's like, you're trying to just keep away from all like the repetitive hitboxes. But in the nature of how he plays with the blocks and the minecart and how crazy the on shield stuff is and how much he powers himself up, like all of that, like taking that into account, it's like, okay, this is way more difficult than we thought. But the roll habits are still there for like pretty much every Steve player I've seen. And it's not like they're doing something wrong. Like rolling is a core part of Smash, but it is there. And that is clunky, no matter how good or how long Steve's roll is. That is still a clunky decision, that where if you're positioning yourself well and freaking your opponent out, I do think you can win for that, especially if they don't stop. And Hurt won because of it. At least in the winner set. So that's really interesting to me, especially because the walls never last long, because Hurt like cooks the grenades well, or he's actually actively pressuring the grenade because it goes over the wall. So Akola is never like overly comfortable with the amount of resources he has, and he's either burning resources to keep up or all that stuff. So that means you're going to be more likely to use your character's general stuff when the walls aren't as much of a factor all the time. So spot dodges and rolls will happen. They'll do like tech in place into reversal attempts. They start to become Luigi Kazuya-esque, where they do like neutral get up into roll, or neutral get up into spot dodge, or neutral get up into up tilt or jab. Like if a Steve player is doing that and it's not working, there is hope that you might win the game because it is a bit desperate and you're probably doing something right. But there is also the chance that you're not positioning yourself well and you're getting hit by this stuff regardless. So, you know, and some characters don't put enough pressure on to even like deal with this stuff that well, but that's the most interesting stuff between the Aqual and Hurt dynamic that I saw is just like, look how fast Aqual was playing in terms of like keeping up. Like, all right, I can only build this much. My wall's already gone. I have to start doing this. Like, I'm going to start spot dodging. I'm going to start rolling when we're getting close. Like, it's kind of like, you know, Snake has like a very slight advantage the whole time if he just keeps it up. But obviously easier said than done.
Yeah, that set was a banger. Did you want to talk about it first, Pink? Okay. So that, to me, Hurt is so good at the game. Aqual obviously, yeah. Aqual is probably ranked one right now. So obviously Aqual is insane. And I will shout out Aqual. I always knock on Steve players for not doing tech. Aqual came prepared this tournament and still got third, which is crazy. He was doing, Aqual was nilling a lot. We even saw a lot of games open up, and the most important time to do nil combos is when you have wood. So with your shittiest resource, you have the zero to deaths, of course. So that's when Aqual was doing a lot of the nil stuff into the up smash and getting stocks for it. So shout out to Aqual for actually pushing his character, even though obviously the character is the most broken character in the game, but like, hey man, you do what you got to do to win. You play whatever character you got to do. You do whatever tech you got to do for any slight advantage, right? So Aqual was doing some crazy stuff. And I'll talk more about Aqual's nils when we pivot off the topic of Aqual versus Hurt specifically. But man, Hurt is one of the most fun players to watch, to me at least, even though it can be slower pace in certain matchups like this one, because of how technical he is with Snake. Obviously, any item character is going to be technical. I was watching this tournament through Void Stream, and he mentioned a lot what he really liked about Hurt was he doesn't always B reverse when he has full momentum in the air. He'll do it right as he like slightly changes momentum and stuff. So because usually when you see Snake's B reverse, it's like right after doing an up B and it's like full drift to the left and then they do a full momentum drift to the right. But Hurt will do it just to wiggle left and right. Doesn't have to really have full momentum, which is really sick. Another thing that I really liked about Hurt's gameplay is the way he juggles in between the two grenades is I've never seen a Snake do it that good. Like it, that is just so crazy. And the way he cooks both, sometimes he'll be like, okay, cook this one. Then the other one just pulled. And then the standard is like, okay, throw the one that got cooked first, then throw the second one. And then those will both pop the walls, right? But sometimes he would mix it up and throw the first one up and over, then grab the cooked one and then throw it to detonate the first one that was thrown. So just a lot of back and forth and a lot of great mix-ups. And I love how Hurt used the grenades for his offense as well. So he would use it one for chip. So another thing Hurt was doing a lot is just from the grenade pool, he would just toss it like the hard baseball toss towards Aqual. And that does about like 3 to 4 damage. And in a matchup like this, 3 to 4 damage from across the screen matters a lot. Yeah. In the last game, the interaction was forced because of the timer. So all of this chip damage matters so much. And then, yeah, there's the roll. I mean, Aqual did the forbidden tech, man. You don't do that block formation. You're just asking to lose. The Hurt's grenade management was just through the roof. The way he chipped with it, the way he sets up his offense too. You notice so many times where Hurt will throw the grenade, it procs on you, on your shield, and as it's proccing Hurt, so if you don't know, the grenade proc, whoever quote-unquote owns the grenade, the hitbox for the grenade is actually smaller for the person that owns the grenade. So Snake can actually get closer to the grenade as it detonates if he pulled it and you didn't grab it. So Hurt will throw the grenade, it detonates on your shield, he'll time it so he's running up on you, and it's a situation where it's a forced RPS, kind of very similar to Mia's offensive set play with forward air. So the grenade's detonating, you're in shield stun, Hurt's running up on you. How many times did Hurt condition spot dodge? Because he has full control of that situation, right? Because it's forced RPS on his end. So he would grab a lot of players in that situation because they'll just keep holding shield. And then he started blowing up the spot dodge. He would set up that same situation, run up, spot dodge, boom, up tilt. And like Gavin said, when you have a tool that kills you below triple digits that early, that fast, and you can set up these RPS situations offensively with grenade is so wild to me. And then even the mix-ups of Hurt, specifically against Akola, throwing grenades where he thinks the minecart is coming, where he thinks the anvil is coming, because the anvil will proc and the minecart will proc the grenade. Now, does every character in the game have tools like this against Steve? Absolutely not. Is Snake probably a lot better than we think he is? Probably. But yeah, like these tools are insane to me. Maybe I'm just kind of more so overrating Snake in my head, because in this matchup specifically, he has specific tools that can deal with some of the strongest tools Steve has, and other, like 99% of the other characters in the game don't have that option, right? So to me, that is just so crazy. And the counterplay Hurt had, and even the way he was back airing minecart, like everything was just weaving together, because he would set up the grenades to the point where it's like, okay, well, you can fall down here and take my RPS with these grenades detonating on your shield, or you can minecart over it. And then as you see the minecart start up, Hurt just reacts, jumps up, back airs. And there was a lot of times Hurt would do this on the platform. He sets the grenade up on the platform, and that is so insane. Because like, okay, if you do the greedy, I want stage control option, jump out of shield back air. If you go back down to the ground, in the corner on the ledge, I'm setting up even more grenades. So the way Hurt played that matchup was phenomenal. I think the way Hurt played that entire tournament was crazy. The fact that he was playing, like the thing that makes me think like Snake is more broken than I think he was playing against Game & Watch and just not using grenades, and it looked competitive. Like, it was legit a competitive set, and he was just not using grenades or very rarely using them. That's fucking crazy. That is insane to me. He is literally just pressing A and the C-stick, and he is going up against one of the best meta-relevant characters in the game and not even using his best move.
Wild to me. To keep it with like Akola and Hurt's matches, I think the most impressive thing about Akola was actually how well-paced he was with like the potential timeout and with all the pressure being put on him. I actually think he paced himself really well. Like, the roll at the end was like, you know, it looks like bad or something because it was like the set ending decision, but that was pretty much the only like greedy thing he did for that like last couple of minutes. So I think Akola has great patience, obviously. And usually it's a little bit easier to display that patience, I think, if the pressure isn't being put on you in all those ways like Hurt and Snake could do. But yeah, I was overall impressed with how collected Akola was in such like a last hit scenario, despite like his shield being pressured in ways that usually doesn't happen to Steve, or all the grenades proccing certain moves that you could usually throw out for free and like stuff like that. Like, overall, I think he paced himself really well, and like something that's so intense yet also a timeout situation, that is very difficult. Like, when it's like both, like imagine if you're fighting like light, but, and like you're getting overwhelmed with how many decisions like you're being forced to make, but there's also like you're about to get timed out and lose as well. Like, it's very difficult. So I thought that was the most impressive thing about, and we mentioned about how calm and collected Mia is too. I think Mia and Akola both have that. It's kind of strange how calm and collected they are after, like, whether it's three stalking their opponent, they have no reaction, or whether they lose in a ridiculous last hit way that's never been seen before or something, and they have no reaction either. So I think that's very impressive considering they're super young.
Bro, they said that everybody in winners was 2,500 plus on Smash Me. I said, not this again. Like,
yeah, here we go.
It's back. It's back. Like, they just,
come on, NA, step it up, man. I need North America's to just shrink into a smaller country so all of us have better internet connection with each other. Easy as that.
The classic. There are certain Smash things that will pop up every once in a while, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. It is what it is.
I mean, I think it's dope that Japan has that option. I think it's sick, but it just realize that it's not the same in a like the US or, you know, Mexico.
There's a lot more to talk about too. I really liked how much we dove into specific stuff, but Banjo and Kazooie is on the fucking map.
Again, oh, no.
Tori Guri. I'm not going to lie, bro. I didn't even bother. I was like, Spargo is going to beat Tori Guri. And I had to eat my words. I usually don't mess up that bad with predictions. But I think Tori Guri is actually just that good, which is really cool.
That, and I
mean, I would have bet it's Spargo.
I would. That, I was nervous when I saw that they had to play. Like, I saw them both sitting down. I was like, dude.
Yeah.
Give Spargo like a normal kid. Like, where's Fox McCloud? Yeah. Like, but then it turns out he lost a Pokemon trainer. I was like, well, I mean, at this point, like,
that's as normal, like, as you get, baby.
Yeah.
Pokemon trainer is pretty traditional for like how Ultimate is played, like Ultimate's meta game.
I don't know. That was a tough week for him. You could tell that the rankings were really getting to him.
Yeah, we've talked about that as well.
Yeah, they were for sure getting to him that week. And I don't know, for him to be what we thought, bro, think about like going into Kyrie, we were all so excited. Bro, it's about to be like last year, Spargo about to go stupid, like Akola ain't been to America, we about to get a dub over there. And then Delta happened. I was like, Donkey Kong. Oh, no, not Donkey Kong. He could lose to Donkey Kong. Oh, no, he lost to Donkey Kong. All right, but I mean, he's chilling. Wait, he's losing to Toon Link.
That is the craziest to me.
Yes.
I didn't see any of this stuff, so I really can't say much. But
bro, at one point, he just got back thrown four, tilted at zero, and just died. And I was like, how did that even occur? Four tilt? Yes, just back throw forward tilt dead. I think he was
my favorite kill confirmed.
It was like, what the heck?
Back throw at zero into
And I'm not gonna do the whole spiel. We always do the spiel. Gavin normally does it. Spargo will be back. Like,
oh yeah,
whatever. Like, people make
this naive people did this to me all of my Smash 4. Because my results could go all over the place all the time, and they would always think it's over, and then I'd win the next fucking tournament or something. Like,
yeah,
this shit happens every time.
I mean, you even said it earlier this year. We were like, bro, what's going on with Mia? He got 17th at Genesis. Yeah. He got
who cares, dude?
Got cooked at Cirque. I can't remember what he got, and then he's pretty much won everything he entered since. So
yeah,
it just happens, man.
Dude, I forget what tournament it was where I was getting a bunch of shit, probably about like losing to Steve or
Collision
or something. Or yeah, maybe. And I like literally said on the show, like, this is a mistake. Like, I'm going to win a tournament probably soon, and this whole cycle is going to just repeat itself. Like, people who have won multiple times before will win again, even if they perform poorly. They're much more likely to win again than someone who hasn't won. You know what I mean? So like, and especially like we're towards the end of like a, like Smash Ultimate, like we're well into like the end game of this meta where like certain like top players that have been around for a while probably aren't motivated, and traveling has been crazy. And like a lot of things have changed with rankings and sponsors. So like, I think it's important to let things settle and also be excited for the future, because a lot of players that if they are willing to keep going, when there's like something to be motivated about, they will be motivated. And it's pretty cool that Gluto was the best performing non-Japanese player. I wasn't sure how to word that, but I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And he's using a pro controller. Is he using a pro controller with GameCube insides?
Is that what it is?
Or is he using just a pro controller? Because some people use pro controller with like GameCube hardware inside, yeah, which is like, I think, the best of both worlds or something like that. Like, I know some people that do that. So it's cool. Like, he's doing pretty damn good with the new controller, and hasn't gone to that many, like less than five big tournaments with it. So
people are flaming him too. What happened to Gluto?
Well, first off, he's playing Wario in this meta. Second off, new controller. Third, I don't have anything else to say. I think what I said.
Ninth is still amazing at this tournament, man.
Very. And like the characters he lost to, like Ryu and Sonic. Like, how is that what we drew? It's so unfortunate.
Sonic Wario. Like, if someone upsets me, I'm just going to like punish them to the Wario versus Sonic realm. Like,
Now play Wario vs. Sonic.
Go play Wario vs. Sonic as Wario. Let's be specific here.
Yeah, that was...
impossible. It's impossible. But bite beats the spin dash, bro. You can bite the spin dash for two, for two damage.
And you heal.
Heal for one. Hey, man, that's a effective 3%.
Golly.
It's definitely more. You definitely deal more than two damage. Yeah. But definitely less than 12.
Half like, of a, like, not even half of a spin dash combo. A no. bad spin dash combo.
Yeah, no. Like, you are screwed.
My goat went crazy. Let's go, Zachary. Woo!
That was the funnest part of the tournament.
I'm trying to remember everything. There's a lot to talk about. We kind of dove into very specific things, but bro, watching Zachary play Smash,
it's godlike.
Thank you.
I've been the most negative, don't care about Smash mood. Like, I go through phases where I'm still playing, but I don't like watching, or like when I am watching, I don't like it either. Like, when I watch Zach, it's like all of the hatred in my heart goes away, dude. I become like a pure soul. Like, it's funny because he's playing like an angel too. Bro, watching this dude play Smash is beautiful.
Yep.
Like, I don't just say stuff like that, bro. I really don't. I can love watching people play Smash, but I'm not going to say watching it is like magic. Watching this dude make decisions is amazing. It's amazing.
With Pit, bro.
And Pit is low. So like,
wild.
It's not even just like... I'm not the type that's like, oh, he's using like a bad character and winning. Like, that's not what I care about. I think Pit's fire. Like, I think Pit's good. I just genuinely think watching Zachary play Smash is fucking amazing. Like, please play Smash like forever. Like we need to do some sort of thing where we like keep his brain after he like gets old and dies. Whoa. And like can like put it into another body so we can keep playing Smash, bro.
Robot Zachary.
Yeah, please. Robot Zachary for life or something. Like, watching him play Smash, even Rob is the wackest shit ever, but like watching him play Rob is sick. The Pit's way cooler, but still.
Hey, man, sometimes you got to bring out the top tiers. It's crazy because he's out here fighting like Sonic the Hedgehog with Dark Pit. That's crazy to me. But the only character he has to bring out the big guns for is Steve, and then he's still just got like, he was like shrugging his shoulders in that set too, but yeah, I mean, he's so entertaining, man. It's always
super fucking good. He's super clean, and yeah, like you say, like he is a light in the darkness, bro. Like, he is playing against some shit that people don't even deserve to play against. It's not even about winning or losing. Like. There's nothing a human has done on this earth to fucking deserve to play against some of those characters. So,
yeah. Because let's be real. There's an archetype of players that when you watch Smash now, and I'm not trying to flame people that play the top tiers or anything like that, but there is a category of players that I enjoy watching win. Or, like, I hope they win. They probably won't, but I hope they win. So this category of players is, like, the rays of hope. You know what I mean? And Zachary is definitely under that category of like rays of hope. Like, please, I really want Zachary to win this tournament. Is he going to win? Probably not, but I'm still watching because that slim chance that it does happen, I got to say I watched it live type shit. You know what I mean?
Bro, the moment I saw you had to play Alcohol, I was like, all right, pack it up. Just pack
dude,
it up.
Dude, I was on full hope.
You definitely were.
Was cranked
you pull out the Rob. Chuck was like, pull out the Rob.
I was like, yo, the Rob though. And then he went Pit. I was like, hey, he's getting like three stocked or whatever, but that Rob game too.
Bro, after game one, I just please go Cloud Strife. Just try something new. Like, you're not just try something. Like, it's not. It's
dude. And then Akola started bringing out the dark tech.
Bruh.
The nil grab on the town and city platform was like the craziest jump scare, and I was like, man, that was messed up. He just nil grabbed him, and Zachary was on the far end of the platform. That was broken.
Bro, I mean, like, I'm 100% shielding. I'm scared for my life, and it just suddenly, like, a fishing rod is coming to you, or whatever that is. I just call it a fishing rod. That's right, just flying at you. Like, what? What happened?
Why did it come up?
I don't remember when it was. I think it
ended a game.
Watch.
I didn't see this. Oh, Forbidden?
It's Forbidden Tech, dude.
Forbidden?
I don't remember. He did do some Forbidden Tech, though.
Oh, yeah. Akola was nilling, not only for nil combos, but Akola was nilling in neutral.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, well,
that's not the one. But, yeah, essentially there was a nil grab. I can't remember the game or the game counter.
Whenever that mind card hits, you're like, maybe I'll live.
Nah.
Mm-mm. Rookie mistake to think
a little spark at the bottom.
Go next.
I'm the same way with Anvil when like I see them still on it. I'm like, I might live.
No.
I look at my percent 80. I mean, that's pretty low. Oh, okay, my bad. Like,
you would have died at 70.
That's on me. Yep. Yeah, a little bit of rage on him.
Justin Meister getting 13th highest place American player.
That dude was, and Leo was the highest place in North American player at Delta. He did pretty well. Leo's Roy. I'm starting to believe.
Hey,
I thought it was clean and it had a little bit of spice, a little bit of creativity to it.
I think
that's important to me. So.
Yeah. Do you think, I don't know if you've dove this much into it, but I was watching them. It kind of has a little bit of a Smash 4 play style in it. He sits at like a certain distance and like he tries to maintain that distance throughout the entire set and slowly adjust based on, it was kind of interesting to see that. I was like, oh, I think that was the thing that really made me start to believe in it. Cause I kept seeing like repeat situations happen in neutral. And I was like, how's this happening again? Right. He just did this. Like what?
I like that. I feel like that's an important way to look at the game that I never really considered. Like when I'm playing a character or situation, like is that feeling happening? Like, can I like kind of connect my usual ideas like efficiently and quickly? That's interesting. But yeah, I just like it. His Roy. Ever since I saw it at that summit, I thought it was very clean and creative. Yeah, I think that's about it. This was a bit of a long one. We had a lot to talk about. I'm sure there's a million other things you guys are going to be very upset with us for not talking about. But
you can pay us money to hear us talk about the current top 3 to 4 players. There you go.
Instead of commenting about what we missed and what we didn't talk about and how much you hate us, how about you'd comment what character you would like to see in the next Smash game since there's a new console coming out. All right, have a good one. We're gonna get into Patreon. So.